我哋平时饮嘅水都充满咗重金属、杂质、氯气同埋细菌。我会用健波能量活水器，除咗可以清除以上嘅杂质之外，仲可以活化水中嘅信息。健波能量活水器，生命之源，健康之泉。六创意健康店电话2882-4848，网址www.healthshop.com.hk。
以下节目内容纯属主持及嘉宾个人意见，与本台立场无关。
So, what's the power of peace?
Yeah.
According to you.
Yeah.
According to Daddy.
Actually, it's interesting that you ask this now because, I think there is a great need in the world for silence. So we have three retreat centers in Australia, and I have told the three retreat centers the retreat I prefer to do is a silent retreat, just to facilitate people to be silent. Even when I was living in Hong Kong, we used to have about three or four retreats on Cheung Chau every year. And we decided, even on those retreats, that we would have our retreat in silence. We would travel by ferry, walk to that retreat center, which was a St. Francis one, Franciscan, and then once we, you know, introduce like what's going to happen for the weekend, be in silence. So we tried not having the silence, but we all decided, first of all, Hong Kong is such a social place. We need a break. We need to not socialize. Hi, how are you? All of that, because it all takes energy. There's nothing wrong with it, but you get enough of it in Hong Kong. So we decided we would only have silent retreats because people would come there often with an aim, like they would have an aim to stop smoking, for example. And by being in silence, they would get a lot more power than if we just had some kind of good ideas, you know, nice retreat, which we also have. But we just found that people really wanted that extra power that you get from silence to be able to fulfill something that they want to do. So we started to always have silence retreats. And just recently in Australia, a few weeks ago, I facilitated a silence retreat. And it was so powerful and beautiful. And, you know, we get up at 3:30, we meditate at 4 o'clock in the morning. So I suggested to these participants, many of them have never been on retreat before, never even meditated. They just wanted the experience. I said, if you want to join us at 4 o'clock in the morning, you're welcome. So at least half of them, almost half of them joined us for the morning meditation at 4 o'clock. And we meditate 4 until 4:45. But when all of, you know, our people got up to go out, they kept sitting and sitting and sitting. They stayed till 5:15, 5:20. So they just got lost. And I told them, usually before the end of the retreat, we would get everyone to, you know, share their experience, and then over lunch, get to know each other, because nobody knew each other in the retreat. No one talked. So, but I said to these people, I could just feel that they didn't want to come into sound. I said, you don't have to share your experience. You don't have to talk to anyone at lunch. You can just leave in silence. So out of 29 that were there, 21 decided to stay in silence. 8 of them shared their experiences and said hello. The rest, they didn't want to. They just wanted to stay in that. You could see that they were just enjoying it and feeling so, so good. And I know there's a lot of power in silence. I know for myself also, 4 o'clock in the morning is the most silent time, not just physically, but, you know, in the atmosphere, because everyone's deep in sleep. The nightclubs are closed. They close 3 o'clock. So the nightclubs are closed. People are home. Even people who want to rob and all of that, less at that time. They do more midnight that time. that 4 o'clock is the purest energy of the day. So if you can conquer sleep at that time, you can catch something from the atmosphere. So the silence you can experience at that time is like nothing else. Isn't it? You tried it, Simon, when you're in Mount Abu. Mm-hmm. Yeah, even recently I took Joyce Ma. She came there and she enjoyed a wonderful retreat. But she said, the one thing I'm doing now, every morning, 4 o'clock, meditation. Because that's my time. That's my silent, powerful inspiration time. A lot of inspirations at that time. A lot of clarity in the thinking. You just get ideas, what to do, how to do, you know, new ideas. What's your experience of that?
Okay, talking about silence and peace. Well, peace means, to me, the word peace, coming from Latin pace, means two things. One is motionless, don't move. The other is no sound. So it's no movement and no sound. That is peace, pace. Mm. Okay, I would like to share with you three of my extremely peaceful moments. Mm. The first one is up there, you know, in East Malaysia, in Sabah. Mm. There's a holy mountain. Michelle, what was the mountain called in English? San San. Well, up there on one occasion, I was alone, and it was peaceful. I was the only one there, and suddenly I saw the grass was dancing, the flowers are dancing, are flying, and the trees were moving around, and I lost myself. And that was extreme bliss and satisfaction, fulfillment. That was my first time experiencing total fulfillment. I've been meditating for some 55 years. Oh, by the way, I'm turning 70 by January. I'm throwing seven birthday parties. I would like you to come on one of them. Okay, about two or three of them will be here. So I've been meditating in all sorts of ways for 55 years, and I can remember three occasions. That was the first one in Sabah. The second one was some 15 years ago in England, in Guildford. It was a small town. I was visiting my mentor, a professor. I was staying there for 1 week, something like that. And there was a Saturday, around the high street, I saw a little poster saying there's a Quaker gathering the following morning, Sunday morning, 11 o'clock, turning into the alley. There was an arrow there. So on Sunday morning, I went to that, it was a church. I heard about the Quakers, but I didn't know what to expect. What happened was, it was before 11 o'clock, people were arriving, and they offered a cup of tea, and we were thrown into their church. The church can seat 300 people, and you know, these days in England and in other parts of Western Europe, most of the churches are empty. Mm-hmm. Most of the churches can seat 200 to 400 people, and usually, typically on Sundays, there are only 20, and only 5 of them can walk easily. Put it this way.
They're very old.
Oh, I'm very sick. They have to be carried into the church. Mm. And more than half of them are on the altar singing as a choir. Mm. Well, this was very awkward. Mm. That church was a little bit different. There were about 35 people sitting around, and there was a big Bible opened. And what happened was, nobody speaks. You're not supposed to say anything for something like half an hour. There was no sermon, no Bible reading, no singing, nothing. And somehow I felt very good. And then after some 30 minutes, one of them, a minister, came up and said, one of you would like to share. If you like to remain in silence, that's okay. And people, one by one, they stood up and say a few things about what they learned in the past week, or what happened to their cousin in Canada, or their plans in the following year. Nicely, quietly, slowly, they say a few things, but in between, there were long periods of silence. The entire service took something like 90 minutes, and there were and then they served out there in the hall. They served biscuits and there were a lot of nice exchanging of views and saying hello to each other. Many of them knew each other, and that was to me one of the best experiences in a Christian church.
Mm.
You don't need to say anything.
They're called Quakers because they're asked not to speak unless they have this shaking.
Mm.
You know, like not to speak from the head. But if you get moved, you know, so maybe you get a palpitation or you get sweaty palms, but you're being moved to speak. They say unless you're moved to speak, no need to speak. So when people speak like that, it comes from within. And when you listen to people speaking like that, it goes within. You know, it's a very very good practice.
And then I came across the saying that silence is the language of God.
Yeah.
God is not speaking Latin or Greek.
Mm.
It is the language of God. But my number one experience in meditating was up there on Mount Abu, as you mentioned. Baba's Rock.
Mm.
How many of you have been to Baba's Rock up there? Okay, you know what I'm talking about. In the evening, you know, just before sunset, I have been there three times, or maybe four, I can't remember. On every visit, I go there every day as much as possible. And the sisters join us, and I know the way, and we just sat there. Down there and beyond is Pakistan. You know, there's a plain and a river, and we look down on, you know, the earth. And somehow, by definition, this is not describable. You know, the experience. You just sit there, you just do nothing, and things happen. And we just sit there until and see sometimes the sun setting. Peacefully, and we were just there. On my last occasion, you know what happened? We were sitting there, and the sun disappeared, and it was becoming dark, and I played the harmonica. Rosanna was there. I remember.
Yeah, right.
And Tina was there. And I was playing the harmonica, and when I finished one melody, you know what happened? I turned around and there were two eyes looking, staring at me. It's a young cow staring at me, standing there, totally motionless, looking at my harmonica, doing nothing. I don't know how long she's been with us. I was not aware of her presence. She was just around. And you know what happened to me? So I took up my sketchbook and I asked her, can I draw you, sketch you? And I thought she agrees. So I did a sketch, and I'm still keeping it. And it was, to me, kind of a miracle. It's a feeling, it's experience.
Ask you, would you say that those experiences, especially the first and the third that you mentioned, was a feeling of oneness with everything?
Exactly.
Because the common thing that I think we all experience in all different types of meditation. Not only meditation, sometimes you're listening to music, sometimes you're watching, you're looking at art, or you're in nature and you just feel this transcendent, you know, you just feel one with everything.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so blissful to feel that, but I would say it's also so natural. It's the reality that we are one. I would say it's the reality, but we are so separate from each other that it's actually a bit painful. We're all, you know, separate. And now quantum physics is telling us we are 99, you know, body and soul, 99.99999% energy. So you are also 99.99999% energy. So what's the difference? 0.00001, right? And yet we focus on the external, on we have different jobs, we have different bodies, we have different, you know, different genders. But the reality is that we are one. So when we ever experience that, it's really like a coming home to ourselves and coming home to each other. So we need to keep, and I don't know if you would get that without silence. You can get it through meditation, through prayer, through journaling, through just being with nature. You know, but we all would benefit, the world would benefit, if we come to that awareness of oneness. And I was mentioning, I think last time I was here, because I came from a conference last time in Korea, and there was this conference, a UN NGO conference, so non-governmental organizations affiliated to the UN. And what they were saying in that conference, when anyone asked a question, what's the solution to this, to the UN people, they weren't spiritual, right? This is a UN conference. And they were saying, what is the solution to this? What is the solution to this? And that top UN person would just say, we have to realize that we're all one. Anything that one does will affect the other. You know, and I thought, wow, even the UN is coming to oneness. And I was asked to read a book before going to the conference to prepare. And that book was called Flourishing Enterprises. And it was about companies who were doing experiments with their staff, their managers, and helping facilitate them to experience oneness through meditation, through giving them time in nature, through journaling. But their whole aim was to create a consciousness of oneness, because they said this is what's going to help not just the world, not just the individual, but even the business. You know, it was so good. So, you know, I think we all owe it to ourselves to discover ways that we can experience oneness. Whether it's journaling, whether it's being in nature, meditation, but we owe it to ourselves and the world, because if we, like the UN person was saying, if we don't realize that we're all one and whatever I do affects you, we're all finished, actually. That was what he was saying. Like, the situations in the world are very, very serious, whether it's the pollution or the climate, you know, change that we know about it, whatever it is, poverty, you know, unless we start thinking as one, diseases. We can't separate borders anymore. You know, like I was talking to someone here the other day, and he was saying that he is working on stopping the drug trafficking that's coming through from China through Hong Kong to Australia. So, you know, if it's not stopped here, we can't do anything there if it's not stopped here as well. Because he said it's hard in Australia because the border, you know, the land mass is too huge. They can't keep an eye on all of the land that people can arrive into. So, you know, how we're all so interconnected.